So without further ado, I have no disclosures. So the policy backdrop of what I'm going to talk about, of course, and all of you are probably very familiar with this, but the U.S. spends not only the most in the world per capita, but we spend the antithesis of the rest of the Western world. We spend 70% of our monies in healthcare on chronic care and hospital care and tertiary care facilities, and about 30% on prevention, and as opposed to places like Norway, Sweden, and the rest of the world that was developed that spend about 70% on prevention and 30% on tertiary care. Overall, we're kind of ranked about 39th in the world as of 2008. Our life expectancy is fairly high, but not as high as it could be. Infant mortality rate is actually one of those key measures that the CDC says is a universally accepted indicator of health of a nation's population and the adequacy of its healthcare system. And we're 6.6. We're one of the worst in the developed world, of course. We also have very high teen birth rates, higher even than Russia, 10 times higher than Switzerland, and our abortion rate mimics that of the UK. Our social determinants of health as well are fairly poor. We have great income inequality, one of the greatest income inequalities of developed nations besides Chile and Turkey, some of the other developed nations that are a little bit higher than us in terms of income inequality. As most of you know, our poverty rates continue to rise. And there are disparities between the states in the United States, and we'll get a little bit more into that. We continue to have more and more polarized elections, especially after policy moves like the Supreme Court decision on the corporations having unlimited dollars to spend in campaigns. And I'm sure we were all familiar with that as of the recent election and all the political campaigning that went on. Also, we are one of the most religious, besides Turkey, countries in the world, and about 59% of Americans polled said that religion was very important to them. In comparison, France had the lowest, and it was only 11%. So that's kind of the policy background of kind of where we are. In terms of a framework, I had a class. I was fortunate enough to be at Hopkins when Vicente Navarro was there, and he had this framework about, you know, politics and then how it really gets down to health outcomes, how those labor parties that, you know, promote welfare states or don't promote welfare states can eventually, change in economic inequalities, which will eventually lead to poorer health outcomes. The good news is that generally the trend has been that pregnancy rates have decreased, birth rates among all teens have decreased, and abortion rates have generally decreased. And I think this really is, you know, a public health goal that we do want to see, you know, women who are young not have, you know, a birth that can be very expensive both to the public system but also very disruptive to their lives. We know a lot about these things, about the high costs of teen birth and pregnancy and unintended pregnancy. Unfortunately, though, looking at a map of teenage birth rates, this is 2008, there are disparities, and that becomes immediately apparent when we graph this, and we can see that, when we map this, I should say, that the southern states, southwestern states, are some of the 10 highest places where there are teen births, and the northeast is actually one of the lowest, and also the west coast. This might not be surprising to many people. Unfortunately, we also have unintended birth rates. When we look at this is from the Guttmacher Institute, we tend to mirror what we saw in the last slide with the high birth rates. This kind of goes beyond teen births, but does talk about really unintended births. And further, unintended pregnancies tend to be more and more concentrated at the lower SES. If you can see that top line here, this is a line of women who are less than 100% of the poverty level. That is really what's increased, even though the higher SES women have actually decreased for the unintended rates. So we have this, you know, growing disparity, not just in the social determinants of health, but in actual outcomes. So what got me really kind of started in this was looking at the differences between red and blue states in two different election seasons for the president, 2004 and the 2008 election. These red and blue states are really how they fell in the two elections. So there were 19 blue states, for instance, in 2004 and 31 red states. These are all statistically significant t-tests in terms of the differences. So blue states tended to have lower infant mortality rates, lower teen births, higher abortion, probably because of access laws that were happening in the red states at the last 10 to 20 years, really. And also the social determinants of health tend to be better in the blue states versus the red states. And I just want to read quickly the social determinants of health according, you know, to a couple definitions. The social determinants of health are the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age, including the health system. These circumstances are shaped by the distribution of power, money, and resources at global, national, and local levels. And I think that we have made some mistakes in public health in terms of looking always and concentrating a lot at the federal level and maybe not enough at the state level. And that's one of the goals that I had with this research, was looking more at the state level, and I'm trying to drill down further and further into the policies. This is going to be more of a general overview right now, but that's kind of where I'm going with this. Just a little reminder of, if you don't remember the Bush v. Kerry here, presidential election of 2004, you had your red and your blue states. 2008, as you remember, maybe McCain versus Obama, you had this, very similar, just a few, and we get into what became known as the purple states, those swing states that now become ever important in elections and trying to do that. Now, the idea was, and what the political pundits kind of quipped and then joked about, was that we had this, right? At the end of the day, we had the United States of Canada and Jesus Land. Maybe some people saw this. And there's more nuance than this, certainly. But I don't think they were really too far off, because I would contend that definitely religion and that orthodoxy of religion and conservatism really does affect health outcomes. And the nuance I'm talking about is something like this. So if we look at the percent of Republicans versus Democrats in congressional caucuses around the different states, you get a little bit more nuance. Wyoming at 100%, Kansas, Oklahoma, had 100% of their, 80% or above, I should say, of their congressional caucuses as Republican. And you can see New York, Massachusetts, Oregon had 80% or above Democrats, or very few Republicans. And what I'm trying to say is, you know, the party that holds the power, for especially for years after years after years, really does affect in a state the policy that's being passed. I'm going to quickly go through the next several slides. These are different maps, but they show a trend that is very similar to these election maps. Here, infant mortality rate tends to be concentrated the highest rates in the South. Teen birth rates, the Southwest and the South, tend to be very high. The coasts tend to be much lower. Abortion rates, this is very similar, but it tends to be just the opposite. You tend to have much higher abortion rates in places that have greater access, New York, California, the Northeast states, and you have very few in the Southern states. Poverty tends to be concentrated in the Southwest and the South, also kind of the migrant population as we go across the border into Mexico. And then religiosity tends to be higher in the South and the Southwest. So looking at these maps, I formulated and kind of came up with this state comparison. I created a little chart here. As you can see, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, California, these blue states, versus Texas, Louisiana, these red states, and Virginia kind of in the middle as a purple state. The best infant mortality rates here are concentrated in the Northeast kind of blue states. California has a fairly good infant mortality rate, and it tends to precipitously increase as we go into the Southern states. We can see, you know, these are the states that are really driving the high infant mortality rate in the United States. And if we're looking at hotspots, as we tend to do in public health, maybe this is where we should concentrate our policy. Of course, how to do that is a whole other question that we're not going to probably be able to answer easily. What is interesting is higher abortion rates were in California, some of the highest in the nation, and this is from the Guttmacher Institute. Some of the lowest ones were actually not just, well, Mississippi, I think that could probably be explained by the restrictive abortion laws that are in that state. But places like, you know, Louisiana, that's all fairly similar. But if you look at very progressive states like New Hampshire, Massachusetts, they tend to also decrease. And I think this is something we should, you know, strive to. We should definitely have open access to contraception, not try to limit abortion rights, but we should also strive to have lower abortion, you know, rates. So I ran just some correlations. These are all statistically significant except for the ones in black that are starred, so that the women's reproductive health rights that I was looking at were related to the three social determinants that I was choosing: poverty, religiosity, and how the people voted in the 2004 and 2008 election. I ran regressions of these. This is the 2004 and this is the 2008. Very similar results for both. I'm not going to bore you with the details of the coefficients, etc., but I will say, just interpretation-wise, that there are, you know, what this basically shows is that there's significant correlation between greater income inequality and both higher infant mortality rates and lower life expectancy. Chung and Mutner and colleagues, they examined, you know, data for 19 countries over 35 years and found an association between several welfare state policies and positive child health outcomes, including healthcare financing, a consistent variable that's often related to, back to infant mortality rate. Southern states with the high IMRs tended to be the ones that were the most religious as well, and I used the Pew Forum surveys for this. They also said that 50% of evangelicals and 60% of the historically black churches, which are very conservative in the Pew Forum they talk about, are located in the South. And this may be one of the things that helps explain why the infant mortality rates are even higher in the South. And there's some other literature that talks about the relationship between not just infant mortality rate, but high teen births and high religiosity. And this is something that I found in my data as well. And specifically, poverty rates, I show here that as poverty rates increase, the teen birth rates tend to increase as well. I think there's a very good, and I've seen, you know, several presentations at this conference that help show this and help, you know, foment this idea. I don't think it's something that is new to us. The idea of voting red, though, in the presidential election, some people might, you know, balk at this. But what I found was, in both the years, the significantly number of red states that were voting had much higher teen birth rates, that were voting for the Republican candidate, I should say. And abortion is also one of those things that tends to be very controversial over the political spectrum. And they have been, and it's therefore no surprise that in presidential elections, the conservative red states which are proposing these policies, even if they don't completely follow through on a federal level, they certainly do, you know, happen on state levels. These do predict, these are associated with higher, lower abortion rates in the red states. Blue tends to have higher. Thank you. So just the take-home message that I would say is that limiting women's reproductive rights for any reasons, it seems, at least for the at least three I can definitively say here, results in worse health outcomes. Poverty, which is highly associated with education, tends to definitely see an increase in teen births as we have higher poverty. The higher the religiosity, we tend to have higher infant mortality in teen births, and it's in both the 2004 and 2008 elections. And politics tend to affect especially abortions, and the access probably is really what this gets down to. If people remember, and you know, a lot of you are public health professionals, Kerala in 1950 was a very poor Indian state that had the political will, the political policymakers, and the infrastructure, and in a generation they turned around very poor women's health outcomes to become the model of Indian states. I think our problem here in the United States with these disparities among southern and northern, you know, blue and red states, that it will really take a definitive policymaker, a definitive political party, a definitive person, first of all, and then a group of people to vote for people and to get laws passed in these states that will move the needle in infant mortality and teen births. I think you're really going to have something concerted effort for that. There are examples other than Kerala, places like Thailand with their condoms campaign and how they turned around and lowered their birth rate especially. But I think the wrong thing to do is to try continue this war on women's rights, this war on abortion, to try to, yes, we should work to decrease it as public health professionals if we can, but probably not through restrictive laws, but more through education, more through availability of contraception, more through universal access to education and access to abortion and free contraception. If anybody has any questions, we certainly can talk after. I would like just to say thank you for listening, and don't forget that healthography in place does matter, but we can change it. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. We have time for one or two clarifying questions. Yeah, hand up in the back, and could you introduce yourself?
I'm Kelly from University of Missouri, Kansas City. Thank you. That was very
No, thank you. I appreciate that. No, I definitely, there was a...
Repeat it back.
Oh, so the question, you know, was that, you know, do not be apologetic, basically, about, you know, limiting abortion rights or trying to decrease the amount of abortions. And I agree with that. I mean, in Albuquerque, there was a group, outside groups that came in, spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in a referendum to try to, you know, get rid of, basically, you know, the 20-week ban, et cetera, and limit the rights. I'm completely for it. I think you're right. In major presentations and probably public health, I could probably speak freely with you guys and say, yeah, no, there's absolutely no reason to limit abortion rights. Very good.
So I'll take one more question to clarify, and then at the end we'll have some time for a broad discussion. Yes?
I have not looked at it in my mapping, so I mean, there's a lot of evidence out there. I've seen other presenters here that are talking more about that and the limitations in states and how it pushes it into other states. That's certainly a factor, but that's certainly important to look at too.